the biggest stories from the pages of the London Free Press and lfpress.com. This is the London Free Press Podcast with your host, Rachel Gilbert.
Welcome to the London Free Press Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Gilbert. From renaming streets to updates on London's BRT system to wondering what councillors actually do and how much they should be paid. Well, there's lots going on at City Hall lately, so I'm talking with London Free Press municipal reporter Jack Moulton all about it. Hi, Jack. How are you?
I'm good, Rachel. Great to be back.
Well, we love having you here, of course. Yeah, we're glad to have you. Okay, let's start with renaming streets in London. There are two streets that were in question about this: Plantation Road, which is in the Oak Ridge area, and Trooper Wilson Place, which is in the East End. Let's start with Plantation Road. How did that renaming proposal come up?
Yeah, so that was actually a number of years ago, back in 2019, I believe, where, you know what, a nine-year-old girl who lived on the street started a petition to rename Plantation Road because of its connotations with slavery. And that was an effort started at City Hall, 6 years ago. And what happened was politicians sort of put it on the back burner, as did City Hall, not only because of the pandemic, you know, other things came up, but they were also looking to get a new policy in place for what they call commemorative naming. So, yeah, okay, naming streets, parks, anything like that after a thing or a place or a person. And so staff came back with this report just recently at City Council and was recommending moving forward on, you know, public consultation for the renaming of Plantation Road, for Trooper Wilson Place, which we'll get into as well. Mm-hmm. Trooper Mark Wilson Park, which along with Paul Haggis Park has been nameless for a while. Council moved to strip those names a number of years ago. Okay. But with Plantation specifically, there was that petition. It's been in the works for a while. But what happened at council committee in late April, with those recommendations, the committee opted to put forward those recommendations excluding Plantation Road. So that's just not part of the mix. And in conversation with the committee chair, that effectively means unless someone revives that at council, the process is dropped, you know, 6 years down the drain, really.
Right. Okay. Well, and she was 9 years old when she had this petition. She got a lot of signatures for a nine-year-old.
Yeah, over 4,000. It's nothing to sneeze at. And
sure,
it's quite surprising given that Plantation is a little bit of a small street, only a couple dozen homes on there. So
Okay, so now she's 15, because it's 6 years later, I'm assuming she's 15. But why was it named Plantation Road? Is there connotations, I guess, on purpose to slavery?
No. So to my knowledge, and, you know, this is based on the councillors chatting at the committee meeting and some of the consultations they've done, including the ward councillor, Steve Lehman. Mm. The street was named in, I believe, the late 50s or 60s. And it was named after a tree plantation that was on the site before the neighborhood was developed.
Oh, so, I see. Okay. Okay. Is that the reason that they kind of dropped that for now?
It was a couple of things. There was a bit of a push from the neighborhood not to go ahead with the renaming. You know, they said it was part of the neighborhood's heritage, given that's what used to be on the land. And, you know, it's usually the case with any road renaming, you know, positive or, you know, negative, like looking to remedy something, where it can kind of be a nuisance to people, you know, depending on how you look at it, because you have to change all your documents. Think of your driver's license, your documents for your home, you know, your utility bills, stuff like that. And so because of that, City Hall usually steps in and compensates each household $100 for their trouble. Mm. But even still, it can be, you know, a time consuming process.
A pain. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to Trooper Wilson Place. This is in the East End. He was Mark Wilson. Trooper Mark Wilson was a celebrated fallen veteran. When he died, there was a huge funeral here for him. So why would we rename this?
So this process started in 2022 when the Free Press and my colleague Randy Richmond reported that there had been a assault of a woman 2 years prior to his death, when they were both in a military training program. So there was a lot of controversy there, and council started consultations on potentially changing that name. What happened was, and it also got caught up in this commemorative naming policy delay. There's a Trooper Wilson Place, the road, and there's also a Trooper Mark Wilson Park, which those familiar with the park know had is it has been nameless for a while. The name was stripped almost immediately, but nothing was done on the road. And so what happened at committee, there was the recommendation to start public consultations on it, but the ward councillor and Deputy Mayor Sean Lewis immediately rejected that, saying that, consultations were done 2 years ago, several times. He recalled door knocking on, maybe 10 or 12 houses on that street and, got their opinion and said, while again, begrudgingly, accepting the change, it's a process to change the address on everything. They were willing to stomach a change to Peacekeeper Place. And so the deputy mayor was saying, absolutely don't want to go to public consultation again, just to have city staff get, yelled at the door by pissed off people and, do consultation for a third time. So what happened was the mayor, overhearing this, actually stepped in and put forward a motion to enact the renaming immediately, which, once it gets council approval, will set the ball rolling. And
So that's going to happen. That's happening soon. Or as soon as possible, I guess. And so then the park, Trooper Mark Wilson Park and the Paul Haggis Park, those two, as you mentioned, are both nameless. What's going to be happening with them?
Yeah, so those are the only two of the four that will be going to a public consultation process. So it still has to get approved by council in about a week or so from now. And what will happen then is the communications team of the city will start planning out a way to approach the neighborhoods with social media and likely town halls and things of that nature to try and get an idea of the preferred names.
And what, why are we changing Paul Haggis Park?
Yeah, so that stems from another different controversy, and that was also kickstarted in 2022 by council, who sought to remove the name after Mr. Haggis was found liable for sexual assault in a New York civil suit.
All right, let's move on to BRT because we got lots to talk about at City Hall today. The bus rapid transit system is up and running, and if you've been downtown, you've seen the new red bus lanes, and you might have seen some new shelters as well. Talk about these shelters because they look humongous.
Yeah, to my knowledge, nearly all of the initial shelters have gone up in the downtown loop, which is Queens and King, but also Wellington and Rideout. That's the downtown loop, that little circle there. And then the first part of the South Wellington Gateway between downtown and White Oaks, it's ready down to South Street just before the river. And Londoners know, the Clark's Bridge is being expanded right now to the chagrin of drivers. And now, just recently, at the end of April there, the lanes on King Street between downtown and the Western Fair Market have now opened in both directions, including that Contraflow lane, which City Hall has been doing a big campaign about. But within those areas, almost all of the shelters have been built. I believe there's still a shelter outstanding at Queens and Clarence, but I digress. Most of them are up now, and yeah, they are ginormous.
Why are they so big? Why are they so different from bus shelters that we've had previously?
So, given that it's like a rapid transit system, they kind of want them to be a little bit of a cut above your average bus shelter that you might find throughout the city. But they also want it to be like uniform across the system. So, whether you're boarding out near the psychiatric hospital lands or down near White Oaks or downtown, like you know what you're getting into. And yeah, they're meant to be big because the city's projecting high ridership on these. Ideally, if there's going to be a bus running every 5 minutes, along these lines, that will be pretty nice and get you where you want to go pretty fast, unimpeded by traffic. And so they're projecting, ridership to be high. And not only that, but also for local routes to, plug into these routes to an extent, whether they're dropping people off at some of these stations or, maybe taking advantage of some of these lanes. So yeah, they're expecting it to be busy. It varies a little bit. Some of the shelters are bigger than others, and that's, forecast depending on where you are. To my knowledge, I believe Wellington and King is like a five bay shelter, and that's a big transfer point between the East Link and the South Link. So, and you know, downtown, so quite busy. But yeah, there are the two kinds. It'll also differ if you know, specifically on the Wellington Gateway there, if they're center running lanes or not, you know, and the room they have to maneuver there. But yeah, there's a 3-bay shelter and a 5-bay shelter. The 3-bay one costs about $500,000 all in. So the actual structure itself and, you know, installing all the utilities and, you know, getting the sidewalk ready. The 5-bay ones, the big ones, are $800,000. There's supposed to be 14 of them initially, but eventually 40 across the full network when that's open.
What's in these bus shelters that makes them so expensive? Do they have special features?
Yes and no. I mean, they're meant to be big. They've got like special lighting and more standard things like your benches and your leaning bars.
Benches.
They've got this big obelisk to stand out a little bit even more and to act as a wayfinding thing.
What's an obelisk?
An obelisk is basically a glorified sign. You know, it's a big pillar erected next to the station. You know, it's got the London Transit logo up at the top, but also at the top, it's like this sort of O-shaped structure, and in the middle of it, it's lit up. So it'll stand up a bit, you know, especially at night, stand out in the dark. Yeah, more of an aesthetic thing, really, than any useful infrastructure.
All right. Well, let's move on to city councilors and the job that they do. As taxpayers, we love to have opinions on that. They actually did a survey that you could have taken if you wanted about what you think councilors should be doing. Should their job be full time? Well, I'll let you explain it. Who commissioned this survey for taxpayers to take?
Yeah, so this was done by the Council Resourcing Task Force, which, you know, gets together every 4 years basically to find out how well councillors are supported in their jobs, you know, maybe what they should be paid or the kind of things they should have access to. And they commissioned a survey over the month of April to try and get a sense from Londoners what they expect from their councillors. So, yes, the age-old question, is it full-time or is it part-time? There's a bit of quibbling about the language there, given that, you know, full-time hours kind of has a connotation to it. And, you know, this is a very irregular job. You know, the hours aren't always consistent. Time of day you work isn't always consistent. You know, it's not exactly 9 to 5. You know, you could be at the grocery store at 7 p.m. and then some constituent has an issue they want to talk to you about, or you're taking calls late into the night, that sort of thing. But the idea of being full time, because, you know, a lot of councillors, past and present, have jobs they also do, or they keep doing, I should say, when they get elected to office. So yeah, there was the question of, is this a full-time job or is this a part-time job? Which has been a question for ages. And I believe 70% of Londoners said, yes, it should be a full-time, you know, primary occupation.
How many people took the survey?
I believe it was about 350 people or in that neighborhood, which may not sound like a lot, but honestly, over the course of a month, and you know, City Hall does a lot of surveys, there can be a bit of fatigue there. That's actually not a bad response.
And
Sorry.
70% of those people said counselors should be full time. What else did the survey ask?
So they were also asked about, you know, how many hours exactly. You know, they asked about being full-time, part-time, but they also asked how many hours they expect counselors to put into their job. And almost 40% were saying it should be along the lines of like a typical full-time job, you know, 30 to 39 hours. About 32% said beyond that, 40 to 60. So definitely in the full-time neighborhood, if not beyond it. But they were also asking about how well counselors are paid in their view. Right now, as of this year, a counselor's base salary is $67,420 a year. It gets adjusted each year based on the median income in London. About 45% of Londoners said of that, you know, $67,000, that was enough. They're paid appropriately. 29% said they were underpaid, and about 26 said they were overpaid. So, mostly people thinking what they're being paid now is enough.
That's adequate, but they also should be full time at that salary, I guess. So what are we doing with this survey? What's the outcome going to be, I guess? What are we going to do with the results?
I should mention, as part of the survey, they also just had a fill in the blank section where they said, any other thoughts you want to share with this task force that's looking at this issue? And there are 30 plus pages of that, ranging from, we should slash the size of city council to, oh, I think increasing their pay might attract more young people and well-educated people.
Sure.
Range of opinions there. But the task force is going to take that information and try to factor that into how they move forward. I mean, they have another meeting this week to try and iron out some of these issues. Among the things they're looking at is the job description of a counselor to try and iron out those details, but also in conversation with them and politicians themselves. Also, maybe some rules that can make the counselor workload a little more fair. So thinking about ideas like a minimum number of committee and like outside board assignments, the disparity between those, some counselors might pick up three or four, while some counselors might pick up, eight plus.
Okay.
So the
And
idea
not
of
all
trying to sh
boards are created equal. Some may take more time than others.
Yes, and in my story on that earlier this week, in conversation with the deputy mayor, he sort of pointed that out, and average Joe might think about that and go, yeah, that's fair. You think about the police board, London Transit, London Middlesex Community Housing, those sorts of boards versus, maybe like Museum London or some of the BIAs. So it is fair to say that the responsibilities with those and the budgets with those are vastly different. And yeah, that's another thing to wrestle with for this task force.
Along with this survey, they actually did an anonymous counselor survey. So counselors could take a survey as well. What were they asking on that one?
So a lot of the similar questions they were asking counselors to like break down how much of their time, some duties take up, like doing research for committee meetings and readings for committee meetings. Those agendas can be quite long, but also things like constituency work or, sort of administrative work, things of those nature. Of that nature, but also how many hours a week are you putting into this job? Is it full time? Which surprisingly, everyone resoundingly said yes, although there was that quibble about the language of full time and the implications with that. But full time equivalent, maybe is a fair way to put it. But they were also asking if, there should be additional money if you're the deputy mayor or the budget chair, which as of right now there is. They earn something in the neighborhood of over $70,000 while a counselor earns 67, as we mentioned. But also things like chairing a committee, if they should get an additional sort of stipend for that, or if you serve on an outside board, if you should get one for that, where again, that conversation of not all committees are created equal comes in. So, this is a complicated topic to get through. And yeah, it can be a little awkward. Counselors talking about their own pay like this, which is why they have this outside task force, making the decisions for them and bringing the recommendations to them. And going further on committees and, maybe talking about minimum numbers of committees you're posted to, whether that's at City Hall itself or an outside board, there were counselor opinions that were quite fierce on this. Again, there was sort of a fill in the blank section at the end. And while the survey was anonymous, some of them didn't hold back. I mean, they mentioned that one answer in particular said, additionally, there are some counselors who spend around 10 hours a week. I can think of two currently who don't really do much and still get compensated the same as the rest of us. This is particularly frustrating as they are not carrying the same workload. So, brutally honest there. And they don't name names. And again, this is an anonymous survey. So, who knows what this is
We
talking
don't know who
about?
said that. You know,
Again,
that's a complaint in any job too, right? Absolutely. Okay, so what are we doing with all of this information that we're collecting about council and what we think they should be doing, what council thinks they should be doing? What's going to come of this?
Yeah, so this task force, they're meeting this week, but they're also probably going to meet another couple of times over the summer. And I've heard that ideally they're going to present recommendations on some of these issues in the fall. Like, yeah, whether there should be additional money for additional assignments whether counselors should be paid more, whether that maybe the job description is amended to say this should be your primary job, and the ramifications that come with that. So totally in the air as to what the task force decides to bring forward, and I imagine there will still be some ability for politicians to maybe make some tweaks when this does come to them. But yeah, it's up in the air since the task force hasn't really gotten into the weeds yet. This is only their second meeting coming up.
Sure. Okay. Well, I know that you'll have more on that and a lot of other topics, the ones we talked about, you'll have updates and everything else going on at City Hall, because there is so much. So thank you, Jack, for your time today. We're going to be following your stories at lfpress.com.
Thanks, Rachel.